Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Our top news story today is about more threats made to airlines, including flights out of Lindbergh Field right here in San Diego. We'll also have news about an East Coast blizzard that's grounded thousands more flights nationwide. Our intern, Hayden Parsley, will have a report for you on a new task force to combat human trafficking in our region. Plus, we'll have some good news for sports fans about a new pro sports team coming to San Diego. We'll also have an update on a boy who was bitten by a rattlesnake on a local trail, even though snakes are traditionally in hibernation this time of year, so watch out. Super Bowl Sunday is this weekend, and we'll have some news about DUI patrols planned by the sheriff. Plus, hear about a new bill in Sacramento to crack down on electronic cigarettes statewide. Today, our newsmaker interview is with La Mesa Chamber of Commerce President Mary England, who will be sharing details about the Chamber's 7th Annual Salute to Local Heroes event, Come to the Cabaret. We'll also have a report on the future of Grossmont Center and some big changes that may be in store for the regional shopping mall. Today, we'll also be re-airing our interview with La Mesa Police Captain Dan Willis, talking about his new book, Bulletproof Spirit. And then on Destination East County, you'll hear about some fun and festive events coming up across our inland region, from our own East County Treasures Benefits Sale this weekend for East County Magazine, to a Cupids and Canines Pet Adoption event at Grossmont Center, and Circus Vargas bringing its big top performance to El Cajon. On Green Scene, hear about an important hearing coming up before San Diego County Supervisors in February over Soitec Solar's controversial proposed industrial-scale energy projects that could have major impacts on scenic areas in our backcountry, as well as on groundwater supplies, wildlife, and property values. Then from Public News Service, learn why a USDA meat center is being accused of animal abuse. You'll also learn about the latest creative tactic being used by drug smugglers along our border. For our listeners in Descanso, hear about volunteer opportunities at the Descanso Library. And for listeners across East County, we'll have details on Hagen Markets buying up over 24 local Vons and Albertsons supermarkets. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. Multiple flights across the nation have received threats posted on Twitter in recent days. The threats include a Southwest flight from San Diego to Dallas Monday and another local Southwest flight on Tuesday morning. All of the threats proved false, but not before causing added screenings and concerns. The Southwest flight Monday was threatened by an account called @ISIS Gang CP. The threat claimed that Flight 4200 had a massive semi-nuclear explosive on board. The tweet claimed that if the bomb failed, the plane would be shot, 10 News reports. FBI Special Agent Daryl Foxworth has assured that the plane landed safely in Dallas and that all passengers were rescreened before the flight continued to its next destination. Southwest issued a statement indicating it takes all threats seriously and that the airline is working with authorities to assure safety of all flights. The company policy is not to comment further on security matters. Military fighter jets were dispatched to escort two flights by Delta and Southwest into Atlanta over the weekend that were threatened, according to the North American Defense Command. Additional threats were made Monday against flights by JetBlue, U.S. Airways, and Delta. The Twitter accounts operated by those who made the threats have been suspended, NBC News in Dallas now reports. Those headaches for air travelers came on the heels of several thousand flights that were grounded nationwide due to a blizzard that has hit the East Coast, including flights canceled out of San Diego. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
If you're traveling to the Northeast, you may have a long wait Over 7,700 flights have been grounded, and many may not take off for days. That's because the worst blizzard in years is slamming the region. The National Weather Service has issued a blizzard warning for a 250-mile-long area where whiteout conditions may occur. The blizzard brings dangerous conditions with potential hurricane-force winds and up to 3 feet of snow forecast in New York. Other major cities impacted include Boston and Philadelphia. Altogether, over 50 million people are in the warning zone, which encompasses Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. In New York, the subway has been shut down, along with schools and government offices. And on Broadway, the lights are dark. Governors and mayors across the Northeast have declared emergencies, ordering closures of highways and streets to all but emergency vehicles and snowplows. Coastal residents are warned that flooding and 75-mile-an-hour winds may occur. In Washington, D.C., the House of Representatives postponed votes due to some congressional members unable to catch flights to the nation's capital from their districts, CBS News reports. Power outages are also likely to occur, and that may lead to a flurry of special activities. Following the Great New York Blizzard and Blackout of 1965, a baby boom occurred 9 months later. The same thing happened after Hurricane Sandy hit the East Coast, when a 10% to 30% increase in birth rates ensued. According to Medical Daily, Dr. Jacques Moritz of St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital Center in New York explained these sudden outbursts of passion this way: "There are no internet and no cable," he said, adding, "What else is there to do?" Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
In San Diego, the second most trafficked illegal commodity is human lives, after narcotics. Our county has become a hub for this deplorable practice, but now a new task force has been formed to combat this crisis. Summer Stephen, who oversees prosecution of human trafficking for San Diego County District Attorney's Office, describes human trafficking as modern-day slavery. As long as young girls and boys are enslaved, exploited, and forced into prostitution, Stephen asks, how can we claim to be a civilized society? This new dedicated multi-agency task force will operate out of the U.S. Justice Department in San Diego. Its mission is to root out criminals responsible for trafficking crimes. In the past, these cases have been difficult to prosecute. Victims are often brainwashed or lied to, coerced into believing they are not victims at all. This makes them incredibly hard to identify. This also makes it difficult to take any action against suspected traffickers. These crimes are often committed across jurisdictional lines, as more and more traffickers have moved to the internet. On sites such as Craigslist, criminals can remain anonymous and peddle their victims anywhere there is an online connection. Officers from the task force team are not bound to a jurisdiction and may operate wherever they suspect the crime is being committed. Many prominent officials have voiced their support of the task force. At a recent press conference, Supervisor Diane Jacobs stated, "This is a good day for the San Diego community, and a bad day for gang members that are pimping out young girls." Bonnie DeMonis spoke out as well. She said, "This is the first dedicated task force brought all together in a centralized way to focus on human trafficking and labor trafficking in San Diego County." Sheriff Bill Gore had this to say on human trafficking: "This is not a victimless crime, and that's what the focus of this new task force will be on the victims. If you believe that someone you know is being trafficked, or you are a victim of trafficking, you can call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888. This is Hayden Parsley, reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
This is Miriam Raftery with some news that's just ducky for San Diego sports fans. It's been years since San Diego lost its pro ice hockey team, the Gulls. But now San Diego is poised to once again have a professional hockey team for fans to cheer on. The American Hockey League Board of Governors voted last week to approve formation of a new Pacific Division, the Virginia Pilot reports. The new division will reportedly include 5 teams, including one here in San Diego. The Anaheim Ducks are buying the Norfolk Admirals and plans to move the team to San Diego for the 2015-2016 season, slated to start this fall. The Ducks were founded by the Walt Disney Company, named after the Mighty Ducks Disney movie. The Ducks finished first in the Pacific Division last year. The Norfolk Admirals, soon to be the San Diego Admirals, finished third in the AHL's Eastern Division last season with 40 wins and 26 losses. And in the 2011-2012 season, the Admirals won 28 consecutive games, setting a professional hockey record. The Admirals are expected to launch their season at the Valley View Casino Center, formerly known as the San Diego Sports Arena.
A 15-year-old boy hiking at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday was bitten by a rattlesnake. Rattlesnakes typically hibernate in the winter months, but here in San Diego, warm weather, even in January, can lead to snakes being active. So hikers are advised to take precautions on local trails. The victim, Bradley Avey, was hiking with his family on Shepherd's Trail when the snake struck him on the leg. The boy was airlifted to Rady's Children's Hospital, where he is reportedly in good condition despite a swollen leg. Here are some tips to protect you when hiking in our region, regardless of the time of year. When hiking in brushy areas, always keep your eyes on the trail and scan from side to side as you walk. It's a good idea to carry a walking stick. While in this case, the snake struck without warning, rattlesnakes often do provide a telltale rattling before striking. If you hear or see a rattler, freeze, then slowly back away. Never reach into brush or onto rocks where you can't see, since rattlesnakes often like to sun themselves on sunny, rocky ledges. Always carry a cell phone when hiking, and if you are bitten, call 911 immediately, since rattlesnake bites are almost never fatal if prompt medical attention, including anti-venom treatment, is received. It's also wise to leave your dog at home when hiking on brushy trails, since rattlesnake bites can be deadly for dogs and treatment can run thousands of dollars. If you live in an area where snakes are a risk, you may also wish to consider rattlesnake aversion classes for your dog. Rattlesnakes can be found even in urban and suburban areas, so it's a good idea to check your yard before sending small children out to play. Keep doors and screens closed to prevent snakes from slithering indoors. If you live on a canyon, investing in snake-resistant fencing with a fine mesh at the bottom can help protect you and your family. Some rural residents keep wild turkeys or peacocks, which will sound an alarm if a snake is spotted on the property. Avoid poisoning rodents, since this can also poison birds of prey such as hawks and owls that prey on snakes as well as rodents. Rattlesnakes also eat rodents and are a key part of the ecosystem. Attempts to catch or kill rattlesnakes often result in people getting bitten. Be aware that one species, the red diamondback, is endangered, and in California it is illegal to kill it. If you have a problem with a rattlesnake on your property, it's best to call a professional to trap and relocate these reptiles. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Hayden Parsley.
This is Leon Thompson with some important news for local motorists this Super Bowl weekend. The San Diego Sheriff's Department is teaming up with the National Highways Traffic Safety Administration to keep impaired drivers off San Diego's roadways on Super Bowl Sunday. Watch for increased DUI patrols by sheriff's deputies across the county beginning on Sunday, February 1st at 3 p.m. and lasting through 5 a.m. the following day. In 2010, more than 1,400 people were arrested for DUI by the Sheriff's Department. In 2013, deputies arrested 1,888 people for driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol. There's no reason anyone should be drinking and driving, says Sheriff Bill Gore. It's completely avoidable. Never get behind the wheel after drinking. Remember, fans don't let fans drive drunk. If you are caught driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol, you will go to jail. The Sheriff's Department has these tips for a safe Super Bowl Sunday. 1. Plan a safe way home before the game begins. Before drinking, designate a sober driver and leave your car keys at home. If you're impaired, use a taxi, call a sober friend or family member, or use public transportation. If you see an impaired driver on the road, call 911 immediately. Here are some sober rider options. Be my designated driver, Metropolitan Transit System, and North County Transit System. You can find links to these options at eastcountymagazine.org. Funding for this DUI enforcement program is from the California Office of Traffic Safety through the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
E-cigarettes could soon be prohibited in restaurants, bars, workplaces, and hospitals. State Senator Mark Lino has introduced a measure, Senate Bill 140, which would ban e-cigarettes everywhere that standard cigarettes are currently prohibited. Senator Lino says that these manufacturers are really selling addiction. He adds, like traditional cigarettes, e-cigarettes deliver nicotine in a cloud of other toxic chemicals, and their use should be restricted equally under state law in order to protect health. His measure would also strengthen enforcement against sales of electronic cigarettes and related products to minors. Locally, some jurisdictions have already moved to restrict e-cigarettes, including the city of El Cajon and county supervisors. But other cities have declined to take action. The state measure aims to protect public health throughout California. The bill is supported by major health groups including the American Society Cancer Action Network, American Lung Association, and the American Heart Association. The Center for Disease Control has reported an alarming rise in use of such devices among teenagers, and locally, educators have testified to use of these types of products by even very young teens in classrooms, with products camouflaged to resemble marking pens and even asthma inhalers. Similar legislation in the past has met with fierce opposition from the tobacco industry, including makers of devices such as hookah pens and vape pipes, the Sacramento Bee reports. The measure could face substantial opposition in the legislature due to the increasing influence of special interests in the state capital. Whether legislatures will enact reforms to protect teens and others from dangers posed by vaping and e-cigarettes, or allow proposed reforms to go up in smoke, remains to be seen. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Hayden Parsley.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. And my very special guest today is Mary England, who is the president of the Mesa Chamber of Commerce. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. Now, I understand that you have a very special event coming up, the 7th Annual Salute to Local Heroes and Installation Dinner, also known as Come to the Cabaret this year. Tell us when and where that's going to be.
Well, I'd love to. We're going to, for the 7th year in a row, we're going to honor 7 local heroes, police, fire, paramedics, and our wonderful retired volunteer patrol, and it's going to be at the Town and Country Hotel, a chamber member, in the Golden Ballroom on Wednesday, February 18th.
Very good. From 5:30 to 8:30 p.m.
Yes, ma'am.
So the Salute to Heroes honors those people who work all year saving our lives and keeping us safe. Can you give us an example or two of the kinds of things that they're being honored for?
Well, these are the first responders, whether they're with American Medical Response, paramedics, or whether they're Heartland Fire and Rescue, or our own La Mesa Police Department. These are the people that are chosen by their organizations for going above and beyond, you know, the call of duty and saving lives.
Very good. And I understand you'll have details about the specific reasons why each of these heroes are being honored at the program that evening.
Yes, we will. And if I could, I'd love to at least list and let your listeners know who the heroes are this year.
Well, please do.
Okay. American Medical Response, our paramedics, our paramedic Cody Brackney and paramedic Kyle Granger. Heartland Fire and Rescue, our fire department, of course, is Captain Todd Nelson. La Mesa Police Department, Officer of the Year is Bill Wilson, and Employee of the Year is Maxine Lynch. And then, of course, we rounded out with our La Mesa PD Retired Senior Volunteer Patrol, who are those wonderful retired people.
Yes.
That go out daily, tirelessly, volunteers to check on our seniors and help us with our events throughout the year. We will be honoring Barbara Burgess and Lorraine Shalby.
What other activities do you have planned for the evening, Mary?
Well, in addition to our heroes and installation of our board of directors, we have a silent auction and we have a raffle. So those are always quite popular with our attendees, and those start at 5:30 during the reception.
Very good. Marvelous. And I understand that these nominations are chosen by each of the organizations themselves.
Yes, that's true. We send them a letter at the end of the year, let them know the date of our event the following year, and ask them to please give us their selections.
Very good. Now, in addition to honoring these local heroes, it also sounds like a really fun event, quite a soiree. I see that it's evening attire, business cocktail, or cabaret glam.
Yes, we're going out on the cabaret theme. Everything will be black and red. Mm-hmm. Cabaret, we have a specialty entertainer that is a cabaret singer. Devlin will be entertaining that night. And, of course, we have themed our menu after the popular movie and Broadway play, which is still running in New York, the cabaret.
Tempt us a little. Tell us what's on the menu.
Well, if you're hungry or if you're not, we're going to have all that jazz, Green Valley salad. We're going to have the Kit Kat Club chicken breast with roasted rosemary, red potatoes, vegetables, and our specialty cabaret desserts are designed by Teresa Johnson, owner of Grove Pastry Shop and Custom Cakes. And if you know Miriam, how wonderful she makes desserts. This one's special.
You know, I do. They've been around a long time. I had my wedding cake made there many, many years ago.
Oh, I didn't know they were around that long. That's a good thing.
Yes. And then, actually, I think they've been there 50 years or
yes,
so. So that even predates that.
Teresa's been in that location for 5 to 7 years, I believe. Yeah. And we're adding this year, first time, we're featuring a specialty drink that evening, and we're calling it a Cabaret Cosmo.
Wow. Well, it sounds like a very exciting evening. And again, listeners, if you just tuned in, we're talking about the Salute to Local Heroes and Installation Dinner Come to the Cabaret being put on by the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday, February 18th at the Town and Country Hotel's Golden Ballroom. And we're speaking with Mary England, the president of the La Mesa Chamber. Now, Mary, if people want to get more information or tickets, where can they get that?
Well, we'd love to direct them to our website, which is lamesachamber.com. And they can certainly look on there and see all the information. And they can also call us if they have any particular questions at 619-465-7700.
Very good. Well, I'm going to be there myself, and I'm
certainly looking forward to it. We look forward to entertaining you, Miriam.
We'll be writing up about all those wonderful heroes as well.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us, Mary, on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Big changes could soon be coming to Grossmont Center. At the La Mesa City Council meeting on Tuesday night, Steve Cushman gave a presentation regarding the future of the regional shopping mall and surrounding properties owned by the Cushman family. A 50-year lease with developers of the shopping center expired in mid-January, and now the shopping mall and adjacent properties are reverting back to the Cushman family. That includes 125 acres, extending beyond the mall itself. The land encompasses three medical buildings in the Grossmont Medical Center on the east, all the way to Interstate 8, and the north side of Jackson Drive from Friar Tuck's to Frazee's, an area that also includes properties on Grossmont Center Drive, such as Red Lobster and BevMo. Cushman told the council the family is committed to reinvesting in the center. He added that many leases have been renewed with retailers. The mall is now over 95% re-leased, and the medical buildings are over 83% leased. But major renovations could be on the horizon. Cushman indicated the family is considering multiple options, and no decision has been made yet. One possibility would be major redevelopment that could include residential above retail. CVS Pharmacy might become residential, and the Red Lobster site could become a hotel. Student housing for San Diego State students located close to transit is yet another possibility. Cushman also indicated that a lease has been negotiated to convert Arby's into a Sonic drive-thru. According to Cushman, the combined properties currently account for 20% of La Mesa's sales tax revenues, revenues that potentially could increase if major new retail or hotel space is added. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing La Mesa Police Captain Dan Willis, author of Bulletproof Spirit, the first responder's essential resource for protecting and healing mind and heart. My guest, who is a homicide investigator and former SWAT commander, has developed a wellness program providing emotional survival to first responders. Much needed. Welcome, Captain Willis. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Let's start with your 25 years of service in East County. What have you experienced and witnessed about how emotional trauma affects first responders? And I know that includes police officers, firefighters, EMTs, emergency room personnel, and soldiers. What I'm asking is, what provoked you to write this book?
Well, over my 26 years, I've seen not only within myself, but in so many of my colleagues, how the adverse effects of the job of being immersed in heartache all the time, seeing so much violence and death and suffering, how that really does take a tremendous emotional toll on those who serve. And often it's very toxic, and debilitating to their spirit. And it can lead to depression, to substance abuse, burnout and cynicism. Far more than half the people who start a first responder profession never finish to full retirement.
Really?
So there really is a disheartening status of how well our first responders are doing, because a lot of them are really suffering and need help.
Now, what's the symptom that you see the most often in your own staff?
There's several. For me personally, it was becoming what I call emotionally dead. Mm-hmm. I noticed after about 7 or 8 years on that I really didn't have any feelings anymore. I wasn't happy. I wasn't sad. I didn't feel connected to anybody or anything. I didn't feel engaged with my wife and stepkids. Just very numb inside. And looking back on it, that was a way to try to survive in the midst of heartache and dealing with people's tragedies. Unfortunately, that obviously plays havoc with your personal relationships.
Right.
And that was kind of a wake-up call of, this isn't normal. This isn't right. And I really need to look at myself, become more self-aware of how the job's adversely affecting me, and do something proactive about it.
Right. And is that also what you see in your staff, people working with you?
That's a very common one, is this emotional numbing. But another very significant symptom is sleep disorders. Most first responders get about 4 hours of sleep, maybe 5 on average, and people really need 8 or 9 to be able to function normally, to process stress and to feel and be well. And if you're getting 4 or 5 hours of sleep day in and day out on top of dealing with the acute stress and the trauma of the job, I mean, that's going to have a significant impact on your quality of life and your overall wellness. Another sign that I see is anger, that people tend to get angry at the smallest of things, things that would never bother them before. And that's just a sign, another sign that they're not processing stress in a positive, constructive manner.
So that really brings us to talking about the official diagnosis of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And I know that the symptoms that you've named are connected to that. But what do you think that the public needs to know about PTSD?
The public, I think, really needs to understand that there's approximately 120,000 police officers in America who are going to work every single day with full symptoms of PTSD, and many of them not really realizing what they have. And the symptoms go far beyond what we were just talking about. That they are acute panic attacks, nightmares, reliving trauma that they've experienced over and over and over again. It becomes very, very debilitating. So PTSD is really a byproduct of all the negative things that we see when we don't train our first responders how to protect, heal, and nurture their spirit. And there are really some effective treatments for PTSD out there. And writing the book was just a way of trying to get, in part, that message out, that we really need to look for help and go ask for it, that PTSD is not a weakness. It's really not about what's wrong with you. It's all about what happened to you. And it really is an injury to your brain's ability to process a traumatic event. And there are therapies that will help your brain heal and put that event in its proper perspective so you can move on without the memories being crippling.
Well, it sounds like another main point is that the event doesn't have to have happened directly to you. You can experience vicarious trauma by witnessing it.
Oh, very much so. Not only just witnessing it from our brother, sister, officer, but often we suffer with our victims as well. I mean, if you spend 5, 7, 8 hours with a traumatized sexual assault victim who was brutally raped, how do you go home and be a happy, engaged father, mother, or spouse? I mean, you really can't. And the ways that we try to deal with it without any proper training is often substance abuse, isolating ourselves from our family so we can just kind of deal with it on our own. And these things are really self-destructive and aren't helpful at all.
Right. Okay, well, let's go to your book. What are some of the main lessons or strategies described in Bulletproof Spirit? Without giving a spoiler, can you explain to us what kinds of strategies you suggest and promote?
Well, the first and probably the most critical principle is to learn to become more self-aware. When I go around teaching emotional survival to first responder agencies, I always ask them, now raise your hand if the job has negatively affected you, affected your health and wellness, your view on people and life, and your quality of your life. and every single person always raises their hand immediately. So if the job is adversely affecting us very negatively, there's got to be something that we can do on the proactive side that will help counteract some of that. But if we're not aware, because a lot of these negative aspects are very slow, they're very insidious as far as how they affect us. I like to call it, it's like a cancer of the spirit. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, over time, you've become someone that your loved ones no longer recognize. And at that point, often it's too late. So I like to tell people to engage their loved ones. Solicit feedback. Ask them, how is the job changing me? How am I different? And if you see me not being myself, please come to me and ask me what's going on and give me that information so I can do something about it before it is too late.
And do you suggest any strategies for the doing something about it?
The book itself has over 40 wellness strategies and emotional survival methods. Basically, it's up to the individual officer to take information such as in Bulletproof Spirit and find what works for them. And I've done all 40 that I described in the book. Some are more effective than others. But the main thing is to find things that are going to be life-affirming for you throughout your career, because a career can be life-depleting. Right. So often first responders stop doing the things they loved before they became a cop.
Oh, that's a good example.
So you got to keep the friends that you had outside of the agency. Do those things that you loved. For me, it was being in nature, bike riding, hiking, going to national parks. I love swimming in the ocean. Mm-hmm. A lot of those things I kind of stopped doing when I first became a cop. And when you start doing those things again and be active and force yourself to be engaged in your personal life and with the people that are your lifeline of support, you can weather a lot of the storms of the spirit that you're going to face.
Well, that leads us to your training program, which is on emotional survival and wellness. And you've described strategies for getting there and for staying well mentally and physically, because I know the two are connected. Where has the gap been traditionally in these areas? What kind of training do you believe first responders usually receive, and where is it lacking?
Well, that's a great question, because traditionally, the only training first responders receive is for your mind and the body. You know, they teach you about the laws and how to handle certain instances and procedures, and they will tell you to be physically fit, but they have always neglected the most important part of us, which is our spirit. And our spirit, I like to define as everything that's not of our mind and our body. It's what helps us to process stress, to overcome trauma, and to want to serve with compassion. It's our resiliency to acute stress. It's our motivation and inspiration to want to devote ourselves to a life of public service. And our spirit is really the foundation of our mental health, our physical health, our emotional health. And if we neglect the spirit, then we're neglecting our overall health and well-being. So the emphasis of the book, which I hope will become more and more part of the curriculum in training first responders, is to teach them to nurture and to protect their spirit, because the spirit is really going to keep their mind and their body and their emotions well. So the emphasis is more on those things that are life-affirming, which breathes life into your spirit, which brings joy back into your life, which helps renew your mind, your emotions, and your inspiration and motivation to keep wanting to serve year in and year out.
I know that you are going to retire soon from being a La Mesa police captain. Are you planning to train first responders yourself as you move through your retirement?
Oh, definitely. In fact, for the past 10 years, I've been an instructor at the San Diego Police Academy, and with the publication of the book that just came out a few weeks ago, I've already been booked to teach in Kansas regarding emotional survival and the strategies that are in the book. So I hope as the word gets out, I'll be asked to travel around the country and present training seminars to help get the word out about the essential and critical need to offer that kind of training to protect and heal the spirit.
What feedback have you gotten from the people who have received your training?
Pretty much universally, I hear, I really wish I had this kind of information when I started my career. So, I mean, people really do know how negative and harmful the job can be, but we've never really had anything to help us through it.
Right.
So now, hopefully this is, that, and our first responders will find this very, very useful and meaningful to them.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a really much needed project.
Oh, thank you.
One last question. Is there another book in the wings, or are you going to focus on promoting what you've already written?
There's not really another book right now. I really want to devote myself, now that I'm at the end of my career, to helping to protect and help those who are going to be coming after me. I mean, we all depend on first responders for our life and well-being, and so often the general public just really doesn't understand how much they're suffering in their service. I mean, they're the only ones that protect and give life to people, and often it's their own life, their own emotional. Absolutely.
Right.
So I really want to continue my devotion to helping those I've served with and those following me, to teach them what I've learned through trial and error, mostly error, but what has really worked not only with me, but what I've seen with other first responders. So hopefully they'll make it to a full retirement, be prideful about the service they've been able to do throughout their adult life, and be happy that they were able to affect so many people for the good and in a positive way, and be happy and healthy themselves.
Would you like to finish with a word of hope for the first responders themselves, if they happen to be listening?
Well, the book offers a tremendous message of hope, a very positive message that you don't have to be victims of your career. I mean, so often it seems like first responders kind of hope for the best. They get involved in a fatal shooting, a critical incident happens, and the agency is kind of there for the first week or so, and then it's not talked about, and everyone just kind of quietly, gee, I hope that person gets over it. I hope they're okay. We can't just hope anymore. Suicide is the number one cause of death for police officers every single year in the United States. Nearly 200 kill themselves. And we can't just hope for the best and lose so many devoted heroes. It's a senseless shame, especially when there's information that can really help them.
Okay, so the information is out there. They just have to find it, and they can do that through your book.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, our time is up. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
If you would like more information on Captain Dan Willis and Bulletproof Spirit, please visit firstresponderwellness.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County has events ranging from our own East County Treasures event to an art show at Mission Trails Regional Park. Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a Ballet Folklorio dance performance and Circus Vargas bringing its mesmerizing performances to our region. Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
East County Magazine invites you to our special benefit event, East County Treasures, on Saturday, January 31st from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The event features four sales in one location at the 1625 East Main Street in El Cajon location, including arts and craft vendors, Valentine's gift basket, a silent auction, and a yard sale with treasures from multiple communities. Proceeds benefit East County Magazine's nonprofit community reporting and wildfire alerts. For more information, including how to donate items or reserve space for arts and crafts, visit eastcountymagazine.org.
Trouble in Mind, a groundbreaking classic about a racially integrated cast rehearsing for what the actors hope will be the next big hit on Broadway. Take stage at the Moxie Theater, 6063 El Cajon Boulevard in San Diego from January 31st through February 22nd. Plus, on February 8th, you can join the director and actors for a post-show discussion to learn more about the play and enrich your theater-going experience. The playwright, Alice Childress, was the first African-American woman to have a professional play produced in New York. For tickets and details, visit moxietheater.com.
Mission Trails Regional Park is displaying works of 7 award-winning artists in one show. The works, created in a variety of mediums, are on display through January 30th in the Visitor Center Art Gallery. For details, visit mtrp.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. Circus Vargas will bring its newest big top tent circus performance, Arlequin, to the parking lot at Parkway Plaza Shopping Mall in El Cajon from February 5th through the 9th. The circus features an array of dazzling performers, including aerialists, acrobats, clowns, and more. For tickets and details, visit circusvargas.com.
Grossmont Center invites you to surround yourself with puppy love. The shopping mall in La Mesa will hold a Cupids and Canines pet adoption event on February 7th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Over 100 dogs and puppies from 17 local rescue groups will be at Grossmont Center looking for a loving home. You will be able to meet, play, and learn more about each canine. Plus, if you find your perfect match, you can adopt and take home a furry new member of the family just in time for Valentine's Day.
Florio, a dance theater musical production by the Ballet Folklorio in Aztlan, will be presented on February 8th at 2 p.m. in the Miuete Dance Studio, which is located in Lemon Grove. The show features the indigenous dancing and costumes of Mexico.
La Mesa Police Chief Ed Aceves will speak at La Mesa Chamber of Commerce Breakfast on Tuesday, February 10th at 7:30 a.m. at the Marie Callender's Breakfast. That's at 6950 Alvarado Road in La Mesa. Chief Aceves will share his thoughts and vision for La Mesa as he hands over the reins of the police department to his successor. For more information or reservations, visit lamesachamber.com.
Bernardo Winery invites you to its annual Vino Valentino Valentine's Day dinner on Saturday, February 14th at 6 p.m. This year's evening of romance includes a carriage ride through the vineyard, buffet dinner and carving station by Café Merlot, crepes made to order in the barrel room, live music on the patio, wine by the glass, a chocolate pairing, and espresso drinks. For more information and details, visit bernardowinery.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. On February 4th, county supervisors will hold a hearing on Soitec's controversial proposal to build 4 massive industrial-scale solar facilities in Rural Boulevard. Supervisors' decision could have a profound impact on the region's ecology and the quality of life of rural residents.
Rural Planning Group chairs and environmentalists are blasting county planners for approving Soitec Solar's controversial projects, despite strong evidence that they could deplete groundwater supplies, threaten wildlife, and create fire hazards. There are also serious concerns over Soitec's precarious financial position. And at least one citizens group, Backcountry Against Dumps, or BAD, has promised to file a lawsuit against the county if supervisors do approve Soitec's projects, which would cover 1,500 acres with approximately 8,000 massive solar trackers, each 30 feet high. Boulevard's planning group voted unanimously to oppose these projects. 50 to 75 residents packed the meeting, all opposed to this radical transformation of their community, meadows, wetlands, and scenic areas. Donna Tisdale, chair of the Boulevard Planning Group, voiced alarm over last-minute changes to the project proposal after the environmental impact report was completed. Those changes include adding 150 battery modules, each the size of a large ocean shipping container, additions that could increase the risk of fire, Tisdale wrote in comments submitted to the county. After all, fires have occurred at other battery storage facilities elsewhere. She contends that such major additions violate the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, and that the environmental review process should be reopened as a result. In neighboring Hakumba Hot Springs, Hakumba Sponsor Group Chair Howard Cook has also raised serious concerns. The question is, why is the county even considering the changes in environmental damage this challenged foreign company will incur, he asks in a letter that he sent to supervisors. This huge project will industrialize an area of rural ranches located in an area with significant wildlife, with scenic beauty, and partially along an interstate highway, Highway 8, with a scenic designation, Cook adds. Both Tisdale and Cook claim the EIR vastly underestimates the project's water use. They have good reason for concern, since the ECO substation project, just completed by SDG&E, used three times more groundwater than estimated, nearly 1 million gallons. Water is precious in an area dependent on groundwater, especially during drought conditions, but Soitec relied on the same consultants, Dudek, that have consistently underestimated water use at other projects in the region. Tisdale notes that residents in this area rely solely on groundwater and have no access to California Water Project's reservoirs or any other water sources. Therefore, she says, the developers and San Diego County are putting the lives, livelihoods, and homes of eastern San Diego County residents, as well as its largely tourist-oriented businesses, in jeopardy. San Diego State hydrology expert Victor Ponce studied this project and concluded it could destabilize the entire ecosystem by depleting groundwater resources beyond what would likely be replenished through rainfall. He concludes no development, no matter how lofty its aim, should place at risk existing natural ecosystems. He advised that if built, the Boulevard Soitec projects should import water for construction, not drain down groundwater resources. Cook and Tisdale want the county to vote down these projects. They contend that the EIR severely underestimates the amount of water that will be used. The EIR fails to include water estimates for road building or for constructing foundations to hold the massive array of batteries or even for washing the completed solar trackers. They also question the amount of water estimated for concrete, suggesting it could be several times higher than estimated. Objections to the projects have also come from the Nature Conservancy, California Fish and Wildlife Service, the Anza Borrego Desert State Park Foundation, and Mark Jorgensen, the former superintendent of Anza Borrego Desert State Park. Their concerns include fragmenting habitat for endangered desert bighorn sheep and golden eagles, among other species that stand to be negatively impacted. Some environmentalists also voice fears over depletion of water supplies for wildlife, including marshes that are part of the Pacific Flyway for migratory birds and water seeps that bighorn sheep rely on for survival. Another big concern is the financial stability of Soitec, which recently had its stock plunged to just a quarter of its former value. A Reuters analyst recommended that investors avoid Soitec stock, quote, like poison. Once a poster child for renewable energy and a recipient of a lucrative federal grant, French-based Soitec recently lost a lucrative solar contract with Tenasca in Imperial Valley. And this week, Soitec announced layoff of 100 local workers at its Rancho Bernardo factory. GreenTech Media reports that Soitec's concentrated photovoltaic, or CPV, factory is on its last legs due to financial losses and collapse of the CPV market due to competition from China and other technologies. Moreover, San Diego Gas and Electric spokesperson Jennifer Ramp revealed SDG&E does not have any contracts with Soitec, GreenTech Media reports. Ramp said SDG&E no longer has a direct business relationship with Soytech after the company previously worked very hard to bring Soytech to San Diego with a focus on helping them be successful. GreenTech concludes the signs are clear, the steel is toast, and the factory is in trouble. Despite such dire warnings of ecological collapse and serious questions about the survival of Soytech in the solar business, county planners approved the Soytech projects anyway. Now San Diego supervisors feel the pressure from Sacramento to comply with renewable energy mandates. But renewable energy could be met by producing power where it's used the most, in urban areas, with solar on rooftops and parking lots, to name just two reasonable alternatives. Backcountry leaders contend that putting the lives, water supply, and safety of East County residents at risk, along with the very existence of some of our region's most iconic wildlife species, would be irresponsible. And if the fears voiced by rural advocates, wildlife experts, and SDSU's hydrology expert prove true, will Soytech even be around to accept liability for the devastation? For those who believe that East County residents' lives and safety don't matter, consider this. If rural residents' lawsuit is successful, all county taxpayers could wind up footing the bill for damages resulting from approval by county supervisors of a deeply flawed project with potentially devastating consequences.
An undercover investigation by a New York Times reporter at a USDA meat research center in Nebraska has sparked outrage from animal welfare groups and the public, with thousands now calling on Congress to shut it down. Bruce Friedrich is the director of policy for Farm Sanctuary, based in California and New York. He recently wrote a piece for the Huffington Post in response to the New York Times investigation, which uncovered the abuse of thousands of farm animals and what he describes as cruel breeding practices and maternal deprivation techniques.
All of this happened with millions and millions of dollars annually from taxpayers, and all of it was designed to basically add to the profit margins of the meat industry.
According to the New York Times article, experiments have been conducted for decades in order to develop animals that give birth to more babies and produce more and also less fatty meat. Surgical procedures are also performed at the lab by people who are not licensed vets or doctors.
The stuff that's happening in this lab, if it happened anywhere other than a lab, it would warrant felony cruelty to animals charges.
Friedrich cites one example of a young female cow whose head was locked in a cage-like device to keep her immobile and was then mounted by several bulls for hours until her back legs were broken and she died from her injuries. Federal law exempts agricultural research animals from protections offered to other lab animals through the Animal Welfare Act. For Public News Service, I'm Monique Coppola.
A lot of people seem to be stuck on drugs lately, literally. Cartels in Mexico have been using high-powered magnets attached to people's cars to smuggle drugs into the United States. The most recent incident involved a motorist who, while pumping gas, noticed a large metallic object stuck to the bottom of his car and called the police, believing it was a bomb. The object instead turned out to be a container holding 13 pounds of heroin. And this is just one of the four reported cases this month. All four drivers involved in the incidents were part of a federal trusted drivers program. The program provides drivers with a fast pass that allows people who have passed extensive backgrounds checks to cross the border quickly. The cartels grow ever more unusual and creative in their drug smuggling attempts, but the customs and border agencies say that they remain ever watchful. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Hayden Parsley.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Friends of the Descanso Library need volunteers, including a new treasurer this month. The current treasurer will train you on QuickBooks and the treasurer's duties. The group also seeks a chairperson for the Everyone's a Reader program at Descanso Elementary School. Training is available, and last year's volunteers are still interested in participating. They just need a chair. More volunteer opportunities are available. If you're interested, please visit the library's website or call 619-445-8814. The Descanso Library is located at 9545 River Drive in Descanso. This has been a public service announcement for Friends of the Descanso Library. Reporting for KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Ed Moreno with the Business Report from East County Magazine. Over two dozen Albertsons and Vons grocery stores in our region are being sold to Hagen Food and Pharmacy, a small grocery chain headquartered in Washington State that is focused on healthy, natural, and gourmet foods. It's all part of a 146-store acquisition by Hagen, which currently owns just 18 stores. The $400 million purchase is an 811% expansion for Hagen, and it is expected to close early this year. The majority of Hagen shares are owned by Comvest Partners, a private equity firm. The Federal Trade Commission, as part of approving a Safeway Albertsons merger, is requiring the two large chains to divest the stores that are now being sold. Safeway currently owns Vons along with other brands. Hagen's CEO, Bill Shaner, has described the Hagen food and pharmacy chain as somewhere between a Vons and a Whole Foods. For the past 80 years, Hagen has sourced a substantial amount of its food from local farmers, ranchers, and fisheries in its northwest location. The store also carries artisan cheeses, locally brewed beers, local wines, breads made from scratch, organic foods, natural health products, fair trade items, and pharmacy products. A key unknown is what the impact will be on pricing for consumers. Hagen's 146 new stores are located in Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada, and Arizona. The company plans to spend the first half of this year converting them to the Hagen banner. Employees at the purchased stores will be given the option to stay, and any existing union contracts will be honored, Shaner said. The stores being acquired by Hagen include several in East County and 25 in the San Diego region overall. East County locations include 4 Vaughn stores, 2 in La Mesa on Lake Murray Boulevard and on Avocado, as well as 2 in El Cajon on Fletcher Parkway and Camino Canada. Hagen is also acquiring 2 Albertsons stores in East County, in El Cajon on Broadway and in Santee on Magnolia. Several other large natural foods-oriented grocery stores have recently moved into East County. Sprouts Farmers Market, owned by mega chain Wild Oats, acquired Henry's Markets in Lemon Grove, La Mesa, El Cajon, and Santee. Trader Joe's has a brisk business in La Mesa, and most recently, Barron's Market opened up shop in Alpine, indications that the market in East County may be ripe for a broader market entry by a supermarket chain dedicated to healthy offerings.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.